WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Harrisonburg has no plans to collect recyclables at the curb again anytime soon, so residents will have to throw it in the trash or haul it away themselves. Harrisonburg is also a designated refugee resettlement area, but it is seeing a lot fewer placements in the Trump era. And are house calls coming back as America ages? Some experts say more doctors will be caring for patients in their homes. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, May 24th.
Support for the WMRA Daily is provided by the Shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with ample parking. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
Residents in Harrisonburg who wish to recycle their household waste will have to keep hauling it to a remote site themselves. In March, the city stopped collecting recyclables as part of its curbside trash collection. That's when the private firm that was handling the city's recycling abruptly announced it could no longer provide the service. According to WHSV-TV, the city's Public Works Department says the city is looking into alternatives, but for the time being, residents who wish to recycle must haul their bottles and other recyclables to a facility on the south side of town. Public Works Director Thomas Hartman says on average about 20 people drop off recycling at the site each day. The leaders of the violent white supremacist rally last August in Charlottesville want a lawsuit against them dismissed. A federal judge will hear arguments Thursday in the case. 10 Virginia residents are suing Jason Kessler, Christopher Cantwell, and Richard Spencer, among others. The plaintiffs say they were injured as a result of the rally and counter-protests, during which two state police officers and counter-protester Heather Heyer died. On August 11th, white supremacists marched through the University of Virginia campus with torches, chanting racist slurs. The following day, attendees of a rally and counter-protesters fought in the streets. Meanwhile, Charlottesville officials want to avoid the possibility of the kind of car attack that killed Heyer last August. The director of the city's Public Works Department tells City Council that existing traffic blocking barriers are inadequate to protect pedestrians on the downtown mall. He says new barriers called bollards, plus hardscape barriers, extended curbing, walls, and other methods are options. Council voted 3-2 this week to allocate $100,000 for a risk and threat assessment for the downtown mall. Community members and a resolution by Congress deemed the car attack that killed Heyer an act of terrorism. Representative Tom Garrett, the Republican congressman in the 5th District, might not seek re-election in November. Politico reported on Wednesday that Garrett had split with his chief of staff and would not seek his seat in the U.S. House of Representatives again. Jeff Skelly of the University of Virginia's Center for Politics said the center had been informed of Garrett's potential departure earlier on Wednesday. Garrett's office has not confirmed that he will drop out of the race. Garrett, in his first term, received the Republican nomination to retain his seat last month. The 5th District covers a large area from the North Carolina border to Charlottesville and up to Northern Virginia. The number of refugee placements has declined dramatically since President Trump took office, and as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope explains, that impacts economies across the Commonwealth, including in the Valley.
From 2008 to 2016, the number of new refugee placements in Virginia was somewhere between 1,200 to 1,600 a year. This year, the number of new refugee placements is on track to be less than 300. Chad Stewart at the Commonwealth Institute says refugees play an important role in the economy.
On average, they pay far more taxes over a 20-year period than they receive back in benefits. If we continue to see the number of refugees that we place in Virginia decline, we can expect to see an adverse impact on our state revenues over time.
The highest concentration of refugees in Virginia is in Harrisonburg. Frank Tamburino at the local Chamber of Commerce says that's partly because of all the academic institutions and religious organizations.
This also is an area that is designated as a refugee resettlement area.
A new study from the Fiscal Policy Institute and the Ten Foundation concluded that refugees have greater retention rates, especially in hard-to-staff jobs like meatpacking and hotel accommodations. They save employers on retraining, but those benefits are slipping away as the number of refugee placements continues to draw down. I'm Michael Pope.
Both of Virginia's senators signed on to legislation to legalize and clearly define hemp as an agricultural commodity and to remove it from the list of controlled substances. From partner station WCVE, Charles Fishburne reports.
Thomas Jefferson grew hemp, and today industrialized varieties are used in some 25,000 products. But it is illegal to grow here.
I think this is long overdue legislation.
UVA's Michael Timko has just planted his crops for the year. His is one of four legal university-sponsored research projects to help Virginia farmers grow industrial hemp if and when it becomes legal.
This is a bill that's going to dramatically change the economic outlook of the United States, since we import over $500 million worth of hemp-based products from around the world.
Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
And James Madison University researchers are participating in that hemp-growing program. WMRA reported on that last year. Finally, the old practice of doctor home visits, they used to be known as house calls, is making a comeback. The Centers for Disease Control estimates that in 20 years, two-thirds of elderly Americans will have multiple chronic conditions, making it difficult for them to get to a doctor's office. That means they'll need more care at home. WMRA's Peter Jump rode along with one physician squeezing a house call into his busy day.
Hello!
It's a cold, rainy day. Dr. Brooke Bostick, a physician with Sentara Green Family Medicine in Rookersville, is making a hospice visit to an elderly gentleman in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's disease. His wife, Marcia, greets us.
Hello.
Well,
it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. We're going to go back and see Mr. Gibson.
Okay.
How's he been doing?
He keeps his eyes closed a whole lot. He doesn't always eat everything I give him anymore.
Like most physicians, Bostick's day is one office appointment after another. But several times a week, he uses his lunch break to make home visits. They start with a hurried car trip into the countryside, frequently navigating dirt roads. Bostick has about 20 home visit patients. Many of the patients are in hospice.
I focus my attention on just how to make the days a little better. And if there's little pieces that I can improve upon, I feel that is a success that is improving their quality of life or helping to head off a bad outcome before it happens.
Bostick asks Marcia questions to help him make an assessment. Home health aides make frequent visits, but Marcia is her husband's chief caregiver. It's a pattern familiar to millions of families, spouses and adult children, often elderly and infirm themselves, looking after very sick people. After getting the update from Marcia, Bostick goes to see her husband, taking his time to do a thorough physical exam before giving Marcia his thoughts and then once again hurriedly leaving to get back on the road. On the drive back, Bostick reflects on the visit and his work.
The pros of me making home visits are me seeing the patient in their home environment, going over their medicines they're actually taking, their great convenience to the patient who may not be able to get into the office without a whole lot of support and may not be able to stand up and transition to a wheelchair.
And home visits help alleviate the stress and discomfort of the inevitable.
As time goes by, you just get weaker or worse, and you go to the hospital because of a crisis, you come out and you're weaker than when you went in.
In making home visits, Bostick is making a difficult decision. The traditional fee-for-service model of the U.S. healthcare system works against home visits. Why spend 20 minutes on the road, 45 minutes with a patient, and then spend another 20 minutes rushing back to the office when you can shuffle several patients in and out of your office every hour? The choice may soon become easier.
If we can provide care at home timely, it will reduce emergency visits and hospitalization. It eventually saves Medicare money.
Aaron Yao is an assistant professor of healthcare policy at the University of Virginia. He points to initiatives by several agencies, including the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS.
There are pilot programs going on, like this, the Independence at Home demonstration project within CMS. So that's a cost-sharing experiment where, you know, if house calls save Medicare money, the savings are shared with the doctors.
Ultimately, Yao believes that an expansion in home visits will be driven by demographics.
So in the Medicare population, the average age of a patient receiving home visits is about 83 years old, and they have multiple chronic conditions.
And that simple truth means that as our population ages, many healthcare professionals are likely to spend more time visiting patients in the place they do best, and the place they want to be, their home. For WMRA News, I'm Peter Jump.
And you can learn more about that issue and that story at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Thursday.